Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Good morning. I'm Angela Fitzpatrick, and I'm pleased to be your guest host today on Career Buzz. Thank you so much for tuning in this morning. Let's talk about sex, shall we? I think I may have got everyone's attention from that. Do you wonder if your sex life is normal? Is my sex life as good as the person sitting next to you or across the way on the subway? The topic that is often left behind closed doors or shared with your girlfriends over wine on a girl's night out is the topic of our show today. I'm extremely excited to have on the show today Dr. Stephen DeWitt, a sexologist who is on a mission to ensure everyone has a great sex life. Wow. That's quite the mission. It conjures up this image for me of a superhero flying into your bedroom and giving you techniques and the power to obtain that ultimate sex life. Stephen's passion is sharing his message of sexual empowerment with the world. He is a speaker, a writer, sexual communications coach, and also works at Toronto's Hassle-Free Clinic as a sexual health counselor. He holds his Master of Public Health in Human Sexuality and a Doctorate of Human Sexuality. If you were like me, wondered what sexologists do, how do you even become a sexologist? Or even better, what type of research sexologists get to do? Then stay tuned as we talk about sex, communication, relationships, and what sexology is all about. Dr. DeWitt, or may I call you Stephen?
Please call me Stephen.
Welcome to Career Buzz.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So let's start with the easy question. What is a sexologist?
A sexologist. Well, I joke because that's the first question that a lot of people ask. And I say that my mom still doesn't know what it is and my dad hopes he doesn't know what it is. But as a sexologist, I study people's sexual behaviors, interactions, and their thoughts and feelings about it. So essentially what people do and how they feel about it.
Amazing. So a lot of people will get into their careers because they're following their passion. So would you say that that is what led you to become a sexologist? Because I can tell you right now, there's a lot of guys out there that would say that sex is their passion.
Yeah. And I get that a lot. And for me, it was that. It was following my passion. But ever since I was very young, I would always be fascinated with sex and specifically the power dynamics within sexual relationships in and of themselves. And then again, the messaging of society at large. Mm-hmm. And it was really confusing of sex can be this wonderful, beautiful, pleasurable, life creative force. And then on this other side, it's this bad and scandalous and degrading and dangerous thing. And it just was so strange that different parties in my life growing up had these very different views. Mm-hmm. And that was something that was really piqued my curiosity. And I'd do a ton of reading, more so than Playboy letters or Penthouse letters. But just as much, I remember going to the library when I was in grade 12. And I lived in Vancouver, and I went up to the librarian and I said, may I have access to any erotica or pornography or anything about sex? And she just gave me this look that would kill. And I was like 17, 18 years old, and she, you know, thought I had ulterior motives for it. But really, I just wanted to read and learn as much as I can. This, when I was that age, there wasn't the internet. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to always learn as much as I can. I think I went to exploring just like different pockets and different communities. I went to my first fetish party when I was 19 years old. My parents were really impressed with that.
Wait a minute. You told your parents that you're going, hey, mom, dad, I'm just heading out. I'm just going to a fetish party.
Yeah, I did. And I went with my friend, and she was big into fashion. So that was the guise that, okay, I went under. She was in Paris studying, and she came back, and we were like, oh, these are great outfits, and it's really fascinating. But I was just like, just so interested how people, it's such a diverse way that they sexually express themselves.
Sure.
And so for me, it was just getting information and learning about that from a very young age.
So talk to me about your career path then. Was this something that you evolved into, or was this, you know, from grade 12 you knew, okay, I want to do something within sex?
I think I probably knew from grade 12 I wanted to work in the field, but it definitely takes something to actually have the courage to say, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to follow my passion, and it's sex. You know, it has a little bit of a different ring if it's, you know, you want to be an accountant or if you want to be in marketing or something. Mm-hmm. At least my parents would be like, that's good, Stephen. You should do that. I fully support you. So it really took me moving out here into Toronto and just figuring out who I am and really getting grounded in who I am. There's two main paths that brought me to where I am. Mm-hmm. The first one is a very professional one. I could share that. When I first moved to Toronto from Vancouver, I moved here literally with nothing. I had no job, no place to live, and no money. And I moved here to create the man that I wanted to become. So part of the things that I love doing and I'm really passionate about is public speaking. I love sharing my message with people. So I built this company called Transform Action Group, and I was a speaker. And I would go and speak on basically anything anybody would pay me about. Because when I moved here, I didn't have any money. Mm-hmm. And so if someone was going to say, and I have a water bottle in front of me, you're going to be, we need a keynote on bottled water. Guess what? I was the bottled water maverick. I would go in, I'd build a keynote, I'd go in because I'd get paid for it.
Sure.
And then if someone wanted me to come and speak on motivation, I would do that. So in the industry, what I was known as a generalist. And I did that, and I built my company up to a level, but I wasn't following my passion. I was basically speaking for money, and that was my motivator, and that's why I left the corporate world back in Vancouver, because that's all I was motivated by was money. And so my company got to a level, and I was speaking here and back in Vancouver, anywhere from high schools to the corporate end. Mm-hmm. And for me to take my company to the next level, what I needed to do is I needed to find a niche. I needed to be able to brand myself, build my expertise, and be able to grow from there. So that was the time in my life where I sat down and I said, what am I most fascinated with and what am I the most passionate about? And anyone who knows me, sex is the answer. And it's very natural and it's just part of who I am as a person. So I said, okay, this is great, but how do I get credibility? Because, you know, walking in the shoes that I do, my thought is that people have a lot of assumptions about, you know, oh, you're someone who's had a lot of sex and therefore now you're going to teach me about sex.
Right.
And that's not where I wanted to come from. I wanted to come from a place of real learning, of real expertise. And again, knowing myself, there's a lot of things about sex that I didn't know. And so that's when I went back to school and I started doing my studies and my degrees.
Well, can we talk about like that's the studies? And I mean, I'm sure a lot of people, I certainly didn't know that that was even something you could study. So is it, you know, science-based? And I think that's a bigger question too. Is there science behind sex?
Absolutely. I mean, just really, if we think about how important sex is to us, you know, it's the source of our creation. So there are lots of different scientific studies and journals and research that goes on in this field. Mm-hmm. I mean, we think about contraception. You know, we think about sexual health. We think about those kind of things. You know, there's tons of research happening around this area. And as well, you know, some of the new products and some of the new pharmaceuticals that are coming out on the market. There's a ton of research happening there. Mm-hmm. Now, on the flip side, you know, you can look at more of the behavioral studies that happen, and they happen too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we look at the field of sexology, and the modern day field of sexology really began in 1948 when Alfred Kinsey came up with his book, which is Human Sexuality of the Human Male. And that really kind of opened things up and really got people thinking about sex in a number of ways. One, it can be something that's scientifically studied, number one. And number two, this book really opened up actually the science behind it and actually research and having the numbers to back up the data.
Mm-hmm.
Because for sex, a lot of people, it serves as a very private, a very sacred, a very taboo topic for a lot of things. And when you can bring a scientific or an academic lens to it,
right. It
kind of opens things up and normalizes the conversation around it.
So before I go to my next question, I just want to say that for our listeners out there who would love to join this conversation, if you have any questions, feel free to give us a call at 416-946-7000. Or for those that are a bit shy, you can email me. I have my phone in front of me, angelacareerbuzz@gmail.com. So now you just talked about the field of sexology and research. what does research look like for, like, I mean, in my head, I'm thinking, do they just watch porn all day? Like, what is research like?
Angela, no, they stand at the end of your bed with a clipboard and watch you and your partner engage in the most intimate of moments and take notes. No, and that's a great question, because there's a lot of people that, you know, that's a question for them. And I'm like, it's field research that we do. But I mean, there's a lot of different ways that people can study things, right? So sexologists can study sexual development, so puberty and the changes that happen there, sexual orientation, the development of sexual relationships, and, you know, even the mechanics of sexual intercourse. And that can happen in different communities as well, as far as, the gay or the lesbian, the transsexual, the disabled, adolescents, the elderly. Like, there's so much out there. Mm-hmm. And there's just so much to learn,
right,
and so much that can be gained from learning. Because, again, sex is a very closed conversation, and there's not a lot of safe spaces where people are able to engage in that conversation. So, again, the research actually allows us to look at things. And actually brought in front of me, I have, you know, the Canadian Journal of Human Sexuality, which is published by the Sex Information and Education Council of Canada, which I'm part of.
Right.
So, you know, it's fascinating to be able to, like, actually read research studies that are being done here in Canada. And it just brings, I think, for a lot of people, a level of legitimacy and credibility to something that they think is like, oh, sex is something that, you know, only happens, you know, at four times in my life. And I joke about this, you know, when I'm in a relationship, when I'm on vacation, when I'm drunk, and when I'm horny, right? And now that's an exaggeration of
sure.
it, but it's that's usually how people relate to it. One of my missions as far as a sexologist is just really normalizing and destigmatizing that conversation for people, mm-hmm. to provide them a healthy outlet for them to communicate their own desires and wishes,
right?
And share that with the people, you know, that they choose to be sexual with.
Well, since we're on that topic, because it is very strongly connected to communication. So it's not just the physical act of doing, but communication. So is that what, you know, is a predominant element that you work on with your patients? Like, what does a day in the life of Dr. DeWitt look like? Like, what do you do?
Well, I mean, it's varied. There's many things that I focus on in my life, and there's a number of things that I do. I do one-on-one coaching with couples or individuals. Mm-hmm. I do work at the Hassle-Free Clinic as a sexual health counselor. My passion and what I love to do, Angela, is really share my message with the masses. So that's doing radio,
right.
Doing TV, and hosting speaking events.
Okay.
So I love doing big workshops and big seminars, and that's something that I'm really passionate about. So my, you know, today looks like me being here with you and all the listeners on radio. And then I have a big event coming up at the beginning of October. So I'm really focused on that and preparing, you know, some great material for the people that I'm going to be working with.
Okay.
But, you know, to get back to the first part of your question regarding, you know, sexology and what it looks like, it can look like many, many different things. A lot of my colleagues work in the clinical setting, and they do sex therapy, and that's the major focus that they do. Where my love is to, you know, it's all about my stand for humanity is everybody lives a sexually empowered existence, whatever that is.
Right.
That can mean you're not having sex, and that's a choice, and you're powerful in your choice.
Mm-hmm.
And that may mean you're having lots of sex, and, you know, you're swinging, or you have an open relationship, or however you want to express yourself,
mm-hmm.
is just empowering people and giving them a platform to love and accept themselves to do so.
Well, I mean, that's powerful for sure. Now, you know, as you said, you will see individuals or couples. Are there triggers that, you know, are common for couples to say, okay, I think we need to see a sexologist?
Those are wide and varied.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's each one of us has what I call a sexual fingerprint that makes us really unique.
Right.
So for people that I see, you know, so many different things come up. Generally speaking, there's two things that'll come up for people, and these are kind of big umbrellas. One, if there's a problem or an issue that they're dealing with,
mm-hmm.
either personally or with their partner. And then the other big umbrella is they're in a good place, and it's good, but they want it to be great.
Right.
And so, you know, they'll come and we'll create some things, and I'll work with them to actually, you know, be able to have a foundation for them to be able to take it to the next level. And that's for me, that's what's exciting for me. That's what I really love, because I think there's a lot of potential there for people to be open and to be honest with themselves first and then with their partners and create that.
Well, I mean, if we think about, and I don't want to generalize because obviously everybody's situation is different, but are there, you know, generalizations with regards to common problems that are gender-based? You know, males look at sex differently than females do. And in what, you know, like females, it's not just a matter of the physical. Like there is an element of a communication. If you're a strong, if there's strong communication, it evolves to wanting to have sex.
And I think there is some truth to what you said, but I would also say that I would caution with the word truths. I think that we have all been socially conditioned, both as men and women and however else we want to identify ourselves for, as how we're supposed to sexually relate to one another. So we can say that men, it's more of a physical thing, and we have, you know, the male privilege to, it's okay if we go out and have lots of partners and it's just about the sex. And for women, it's the emotional, and they need that emotional connection and all those other kind of things. And what I really encourage people when I work with them is to think about that men have the right to have that emotional connection, and that's something that they need. And women also have the right to be sexual and to be able to freely express and follow through on their desires.
Right. Well, and that actually brings up a good point, because, you know, it is one of those taboo or those things that, you know, you don't openly talk about, you know, sex. So you do end up coming into these generalizations, but you're right. I mean, everybody is an individual. Everybody has different aspects of what they deem as, you know, issues or non-issues. And I guess, you know, how about differences as far as heterosexual relationships or homosexual relationships? Do you see kind of commonalities between?
When I talk to anybody, I first and foremost look at them as a human being. And really what that, and just getting really grounded in that, we have a lot of labels. We have a lot of barriers and boundaries that come up with those labels. And at the end of the day, we're all human beings. We're all flawed human beings. Our worst fear is to be judged and made wrong. And what we want is to be loved and accepted.
Right.
Period, full stop. Anything above that and beyond that, sure, those are things we can deal with. But I wouldn't say it's this community has this and that community has that. You know, when we get down to the real base and getting really grounded in who that person is and what they actually want, then, you know, it just levels the playing field.
So, I mean, to your point, there are different variables on people's lives, regardless of whether it's sex or whether it's, you know, just everyday life. I mean, how about culturally? Like, I mean, you know, there's, from a cultural standpoint, sex is played or deemed differently.
Yeah, and absolutely. And those are some of the most challenging people that I've had the privilege of talking to and or working with is, as I said, and I believe really strongly that, you know, our sexuality has been socially constructed. And, you know, in North America, and I can speak to this, you know, there's a lot of sex negative messaging that we grow up with about when it's right and when it's wrong, when it's good and when it's bad. And, you know, there are other cultures where that sex is even further repressed or either further demonized. And it is a natural and healthy drive for each and every one of us. And making that wrong and making that evil and making and demonizing that and punishing ourselves when we do have sexual thoughts or we do sexually express ourselves really puts us and puts people in general in a very, very dark place and not knowing how to navigate out of that.
Right.
And so the cultural and the social context that people come from definitely has a massive impact and can be challenging to work through. But again, those are some of the most rewarding people.
Right.
You know, when they can get, you know, just real clear on where the messages came from The second thing is if those messages work for them. If those messages do work for them and it's how they want to express themselves sexually, amazing.
Right.
I'm not here to change anyone. I'm here to help them get clear on what's really going to work for them. So if those messages work for them, amazing. If they're clear that those messages don't work for them, then working with them on how to, okay, so how do we change the script there? And how do we change those messages so it does work for them?
Well, you know, as you were talking about, you know, I guess in a way stigmatizing, like, let's talk about the industry of sex, because I mean, this is a whole realm of, like, you know, for pornography, and you mentioned Playboy and that type of thing. And how does that play into, you know, people's thoughts about sex? Do you think that that has helped to normalize it, or?
There, I'm of two minds. My answer to that is yes and no.
Okay.
I think what the proliferation of pornography, and specifically internet pornography, has really opened people's minds to what's out there. And I mean, you can go Google anything and you can see what it is. And I always tell people that porn is great for entertainment, not so great for education.
Right.
And unfortunately, because of the diminished space to have healthy conversations and normal conversations about sex, what happens is porn becomes the default sex education.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when things can get dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I speak on are the porn prophecies, you know, and what you're supposed to be like as a woman having sex, what you're supposed to be like as a man having sex.
Right.
And a lot of that can then play into, you know, how people choose to sexually express themselves, and not getting, again, you know, the fundamental basis where I operate from is just getting real with who that person is.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're operating from a performance base, mm-hmm. which is what pornography is, it's a performance.
Right.
Like, let's get really clear. These are sexual athletes, and there's a lot of things that get edited out,
mm-hmm.
and it's an acting performance. There's just a lot more friction involved.
Mm-hmm.
And
no pun intended.
None. And and so, you know, it's looking at things and saying, yeah, so men, we have to have amazing bodies. We have to have large members. We're supposed to satisfy our partners all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're king studs. And, you know, a lot of that plays on the male psyche. You know, as women, you're there to serve men. You always have orgasms. Your bodies always look like this. And, you know, you are wanton and do whatever and want more. And, you know, so there's all these different messages that come from porn that don't necessarily accurately represent how your average person, you know, who's listening today, or, you know, who's in your class, or who you work with, you know, sexually express themselves. So there can be that pressure,
mm-hmm.
and that idea of performance.
Right. Well, as you're, you know, talking about this sex education, it kind of triggers a thought about youth today. I mean, there's this, you know, theory that kids are having sex younger. Do you think that's the case?
There's studies that are going to say yes, that's the case, and studies, mm-hmm. that are going to say no, that's the case. And, you know, if we go back 50 years, you know, our parents were saying the same thing about us. And what I think is important is the context that they're having sex in. And I think that is shifting, where I think, and I can speak for myself as someone who's 34 years old at this time, you know, growing up, sex was supposed to happen when you're in a committed relationship and you love that person. And that's
right.
How I grew up. I can only speak for my own truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that now the with the access of, you know, cell phones, smartphones, internet, texting, being able to send videos, pictures, social media, all this other kind, it's just blown things wide open and giving people and specifically youth a way to communicate about their sexuality in a way they haven't before.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, because I think youth, and I can speak for myself growing up, hey, I wanted to talk about sex.
Right.
Like, I was horny. I had all these hormones going on.
Sure.
I couldn't think straight. I was all over the place. But there was no access for that. I had sex education, I think, once a semester for like 5 hours, and that was it. The conversation was over. And, you know, maybe if, you know, people had a boyfriend or girlfriend, they would have sex. And now it's actually, youth has a voice. They have a mechanism to communicate in a way that actually, you know, maybe there's some barriers up there that it's not face-to-face communication, and that's something that I always encourage.
Right.
But they could do it with text, they could do it through Facebook, they could do it with tweets, they can send all this other kind of stuff out there.
Yeah.
And I think people are seeing that and then saying kids are having sex more often and younger. And I don't, like I said, there's studies that can support either one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the most important thing is, you know, if you are a young person, that, you know, you do, you know, think about who you are, and the decisions that you want to make
mm-hmm.
are done in a really safe place. And it's not, you know, you're caught up in the moment, or you've been at a party or anything else like that. And for parents to talk to their kids about sex, please, because they're thinking about it, they're talking to other people about it, and creating a really safe place and a normalized place for your kids to talk and get healthy, age-appropriate information is just fundamental for that person and your child to grow into, you know, a healthy sexual being.
Well, when you're talking about lines of communication, I mean, we certainly have evolved, you know, ways. You know, people always wonder, if I'm sexting, is that sex? And to your point, is it a line of communication, so that equates to sex, or is it the physical act of it? Like, what are your thoughts around that?
I think that's unique and individual for each person.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would say, you know, if you're having sex with someone, then it would be the physical act. I think the gray area occurs if you're in a committed monogamous relationship
sure.
with someone, and then you're sexting someone else.
Right.
Right? That's when there has to be an understanding, or I would encourage an understanding between all parties involved of what that is and where those lines are drawn. And the line is between what is happening in my reality and my relationship and
mm-hmm.
with the person that, you know, I'm in love with, or I have an agreement with, that we're going to be sexual together.
Right.
And then this other thing, it's fantasy. And there's a clear, this is what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And I always encourage people that honesty is the best policy. Getting people to that point where they're comfortable communicating is where I help people the most.
This is great. Well, we're just going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how bad sex sucks. So don't go anywhere.
Awesome.
From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, presenting the history and evolution of sound for 25 years and counting. CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
We're back at Career Buzz, and I'm your host, Angela Fitzpatrick, and we're talking about the life of being a sexologist and what that entails. For those of you listeners out there, let's not be shy. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 416-946-7000 or email me at angelacareerbuzz@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. So we were just before the break, we were talking about normalizing sex. And I think back to my mom sitting me down to give me, quote unquote, the talk about sex. And I can honestly say that it happened on my wedding day, which was 10 years after I lost my virginity. So now, now that was, you know, our parents' generation. I see that, you know, we're more comfortable obviously talking about sex. But, you know, what are some, I know that you have a blog called badsexsucks.com. So tell me about that.
Yeah, that was, I was in school and I was thinking about, you know, one of the things that I'm really focused on is using the internet as a platform for me to be able to get my message out. And there's a lot of stuff online about, you know, good sex or how to make it better, the top 10 tips and all this other kind of stuff. And I was like, you know what? Bad sex sucks. And there's no real forum for this to actually take place. And it actually, the funny story was, is in my world, it was a sexual partner of mine, and we had sex and it was bad sex. But the amazing part was, is we talked about it afterwards and we were like, that was bad. Let's not do it again. And she was like, okay, cool. We're not doing it again. And we were great friends afterwards and it was amazing. She was relocating. She was going back to Australia. And before she went, she took a girls' trip to Vegas. And she sends me this text when she's in Vegas and she's like, Steven, she's like, I got you something. And I'm like, awesome. Like, I have all this cool stuff in my head as a sexologist. You know, you get excited about people buying you gifts. And she came and she gave me this magnet. And this magnet has this this outline of this couple, this male and female couple. And on the bottom, it says, bad sex sucks. So she gave me this and it's still on my fridge now. And, you know, one day I was, you know, thinking and working late, and then I went to bed and I woke up bolt upright at 4 a.m. And I said, I wonder if badsexsucks.com is available. So I went online, it was available, and I was like, hey, let's create this. And so there was a couple of things with the website, excuse me. One is creating unity, because regardless of how you choose to sexually express yourself, if you're sexually active, you've had bad sex. Sure. Regardless of who your partners are or how you choose to express. So there's a straight section, there's a gay section, there's a lesbian section, there's a solo section, there's a group section, wow. Right? So it's just normalizing and being like, hey, we've all had bad sex. The other part is education. So what I'll do is I'll take a story as they're submitted and I'll, as a sexologist, I'll come and I'll speak to it or write about it as it is on a blog. And from two angles is one, how to prevent this from happening in the future so people can read this. And I'm like, if I'm ever in this situation and this happens, what do I do? And then the second is how, like a safe exit strategy. If that's happening to you and you like haven't been able to prevent it, whatever, and it's happening, you're like, hey, how do I exit this really quickly and safely and not offending people and things of that nature?
Sure.
Yeah. So that's how Bad Sex Sex came, and it's great, and it's really funny. There's a lot of awesome stories.
I was reading through some of them yesterday. I'm like, that happened to me.
Yeah,
that's
exactly right. And people can comment on them. And it was just something that when I was in school, I was like, I want to learn more, and I want to learn more about, you know, something that, you know, I don't have a lot of personal experience in, but like, what does bad sex, what's it about? Because there's not a space to talk about it. Maybe you joke with your friends about it, but it's like, okay, maybe we can share this and people can read it and learn something from it.
Right.
And that's the key thing is, for me, is just learning and then sharing that learning.
Well, yeah, and that goes back to normalizing it and being able to actually speak about it openly. So this might be a silly question, but are there trends in sexuality, like things that are in fashion? Is that a weird question?
Yes,
there is.
And I can speak to, you know, maybe the mainstream population, because there's always been communities that have been focused on specific areas of sexual expression. We can look at the kink community or the BDSM community, or, you know, even within that, the bondage or the impact play or the puppy play, or, you know, there's a lot of...
Puppy play.
Puppy play.
What's that? What's that?
Puppy
mean?
Play is where there's a quote unquote owner.
Yeah.
And then there is someone who takes the form or the expression of a dog. And that's how they choose to.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, sexually express themselves. Yeah.
And it's called puppy play.
Puppy play. Okay. Yeah. Absolutely.
I learned something today. All right.
I hope you learn a lot today.
Yes, as I'm sitting here blushing, for those who can't see me, my face is red.
You look
this
lovely.
But trends.
Trends,
like,
yeah. So if we look at the mainstream trends, I mean, one of the things that I am most fascinated with and most passionate about is the trend that I see as far as women's empowerment and women having a voice and finding a voice now. And for a long time, women have been told and taught that they don't have a sexual voice, and if they do, that makes them a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to be wanted. They're going to be tainted. And I, you know, that changing is just so amazing. And we see it reflected in our media. You know, Sex in the City or some of the Housewives is just powerful women being like, hey, I have a right. I have agency over my body.
Right.
I have agency over my sexuality, over my desire, and being able to choose and share that with whom I want.
Right.
It's not this dynamic that I think, you know, we've grown up with where in a heterosexual relationship, you know, the male is the aggressor and he's the one, you know, making the moves. And then there's the woman being like, oh no, me and my purity, I'm going to save myself. Right.
Yes.
It's really leveling that playing field and being like, hey, you know what, this is a healthy part of me and this is a healthy part of you. And, you know, does this work for us?
Mm-hmm.
And women doing that. And this could be women in long-term relationships with their husbands. This can be, you know, women who are single. These, you know, women who are dating. And that for me is just an amazing thing to see and something that I'm really passionate about and I'm fully supportive of.
Well, that's great, because let me just say there's this thing that people are rumoring will be the next baby boom, which is the book series called 50 Shades of Grey. So how do you think, you know, that kind of affects the bedroom? And is that a trend? Like, I mean, it's amazing how many girlfriends, have you read it? You know, like, is outside forces like that, does that affect us in the bedroom?
Absolutely. And outside forces affect everything that we do. And again, that's to the socialization of our sexuality. And 50 Shades of Grey has had a massive impact on sexuality and women's sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And what I say it's done, it's created a space for women to talk about something that they kind of knew about and was out there, like this kinky power exchange relationship, BDSM.
Sure.
But it's provided it in a format that's easily digestible and palatable. So, you know, previously, you know, I can paint the picture, you know, a woman gets up and she goes outside to pick up her mail in the morning and she sees her other neighbor. She can't really say, hey, did your husband tie you up last night and use a riding crop on you? Like that, there's just no reality for that conversation to happen.
Right.
But now you can go get your mail and be like, oh my goodness, have you read 50 Shades of Grey? And your neighbor's like, yeah. And you're like, oh my God, wasn't it hot when?
Yeah.
Boom. So it's brought these things out into the public, into the mainstream in an easily digestible and palatable way. And it's really opened up a conversation. I think that has a massive impact. And, you know, one of the things that I'm working on is, you know, it's great to have this conversation, but where do you take it from here? So there's a lot of questions that people have from the book is like, wow, this is really hot. It was really arousing. I really liked it. But how do I talk to my partner about that? Or how do I use a Wartenberg wheel? Or where do I buy this stuff? Or
right.
Who are the experts? Or how do I learn more?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's as a sexologist, that's kind of where I step in.
Well, that's a perfect segue to the next topic, which is your upcoming show. So tell me about 50 Shades of Sexual Wealth.
Yeah, 50 Shades of Sexual Wealth is something that I created as kind of the next steps for people who, one, have either read the books, or two, interested in what kink or BDSM or power exchange relationships are. And the tagline is fantasy to life. So these are going to be like, hey, I read the books, but how do I actually incorporate that into my world? Be it, I have a partner now, and how do I bring up that conversation?
Sure.
And, or I don't have a partner now, but this is something that I'm interested. Where do I, quote unquote, find someone who's into this?
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've done is I've created an event on Thursday, October 4th, and we're looking at having an estimated audience of 250 women. What I've done is I've brought the best minds in Ontario together for
right.
this event, and it's basically bridging the mainstream community
right.
and the sex positive community or the kink community.
Okay.
So I'm going to have a panel discussion with prominent DOMs and prominent subs in the city.
Wow.
So people can actually, okay, well, I read this book and that's the only real relationship that I've actually seen where there's a DOM or a sub, but now I actually have this space where there's these real life people and I can talk to them, and they're real and they're normal and they're nice people. They're just like me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to have some great stores there. Good for Her is going to be there. Oasis Aqua Lounge is going to be there. So all these sex positive places where people can go and be like, oh, it's not this scary, weird thing that I thought it was before, and it's not this what was depicted in the book, and I now have the tools, mm-hmm. I now have the communication methods, and I have the confidence to actually be able to step forward and say, okay, well, what do I want this to look like in my life?
Sure.
And be able to take steps to do that.
So the stats around it, it's on October 4th?
Yeah, so Thursday, October 4th. Mm-hmm. It's going to be here in the Delta Chelsea in Toronto. That's 33 Girard. And it's going to run from 6:30 till about 10 o'clock. And people can visit. The website is 50 Shades. So that's 50shadesofsexualwealth.com. And they can find out more information about who's going to be there and our sponsors. And they can also buy tickets there as well.
Amazing. So speaking of tickets, we have two tickets to give away to our female audience members. So the first female to email me at angelacareerbuzz@gmail.com will win these tickets. Thank you so much for joining us. What a great chat. I mean, last night I was so excited. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to learn something today. And I certainly did. So thank you again for joining me today. So the next guest we have on the show is actually sharing the stage with Stephen at 50 Shades of Sexual Wealth, and I was fascinated with what she did and her career mission. Sasha Lala is a women empowerment leader, speaker, and coach who helps successful people who know they were meant for something bigger take their life to that next level. She's particularly adept at removing the mental and emotional barriers that often prevent you from living your biggest, most self-expressed life. So Sasha, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So you are a performance and relationship coach. What does that mean?
So that means that I have conversations with people in areas of their life that they are stuck in or stopped by. Performance could range from in relationships, in business, in, you know, following their certain career goals or even personal goals, and in relationships, because that is something that, being a very social species, yeah. is very, very important to us. So,
well,
yeah.
That's great. So what is the difference between what coaching is related to, say, a therapist or a psychologist?
Good question. So therapists or psychologists, they are clinical professionals.
Right.
And they are people who, you know, have all sorts of different conversations. And I'm not about to speak on what psychologists do. I'm not one. But I can speak about a coach. And where a coach, in my perspective, differs is they are individuals who are on the court in life with their clients.
Okay.
I'm not sitting in a chair expounding information that I learned. It's not theoretical. I am taking these tools and applying them to my life. I'm practicing and seeing what works and doesn't work in my relationships, and giving my points of view, my perspectives on issues or relationships in real time to my clients, so that they're not on the court by themselves.
Okay, so then tell me what that day-to-day life looks like. I know I asked Stephen the same question. I'm totally fascinated. Like, what does it look like?
So it would look like, so my day is littered with various client calls I would have throughout the day. So
okay.
Usually I have one call a week with my clients. Right now I'm, you know, planning live workshops because I'm also a speaker. I'm launching a teleseminar, so I'm preparing for that. Having people who are looking to just find information, because not every coach is for every person. And so there's a lot of times people contact me to find out what my energy is, what my vibe is, if I'm speaking in a way that they actually can hear and listen and relates to them.
Right.
So that's mostly my day, is having lots and lots of conversations. It's lots of speaking.
Good. Well, and you're very social. So, I mean, that kind
it's
of...
It's a perfect job.
Yeah, perfect fit. Now, have you always been a coach?
I think in my heart of hearts, I have. Mm-hmm. If I look at the conversations growing up that I love the most, whether it was with my friends or around a family dinner, it was always the conversations that were meaningful and important, not just what did you do today, but how did that make you feel when you missed the bus or when the teacher didn't pick you? Asking questions that dive a bit deeper to find out the conversation that's going on behind the words.
Right.
And so at heart, I think I always have been, but no, in regards to professional, no, I come from a very, very corporate background. I was the director of sales and marketing for a national company in Canada, and left that to pursue this, which is something much more in line with my heart's calling and what I think is a full expression of what I want to contribute to the planet.
How was that transition? I mean, you're going from the corporate world into the unknown. I mean, well, a little bit, you know, you're having to establish yourself, having to establish a brand, because essentially you are a brand.
Absolutely. How that was difficult, definitely. Most people don't leave a very secure, high-level position that's paying the bills to do something as crazy as this new age thing called, oh, life coaching or personal coaching that everyone calls it. And it was difficult to just believe that it was possible and to trust in my ability and trust in mostly my love of it.
Right.
And it was the best decision I ever made.
Okay.
100%. In no way was I in any way treated badly in the position. It was a great position. But there was a point in time where I was getting up in the mornings and I didn't know what I was doing with my day. The money was great and it didn't feed my soul.
Right.
And it didn't nurture me. And what is the point of having all the money in the world if I couldn't be proud and fulfilled at the end? The biggest thing I remember is being a little kid and my parents sitting me down at the kitchen table and saying, Sasha, the greatest tragedy in life is to be lying on your deathbed, only to realize that the greatest music of you is yet to be played. And
wow.
I didn't want to be that 80-year-old.
Right, right. Well, I mean, and that's certainly so powerful. And I mean, the fact that you've done that, I'm sure you use that with your coaching, you know, people, because that is something that I'm sure so many people grapple with.
Totally. And that's the basis of everything that I coach on. I am unwilling to have human beings live a life unexpressed and unfulfilled. To me, it's such a waste.
Well, Stephen was talking about, you know, women's sexual empowerment.
Yes.
And, you know, sexual empowerment plays in so many different realms of your life. So you call yourself a woman empowerment leader.
Yes.
What's that?
So I love what Stephen said earlier about this new wave, especially within sexuality, of women owning their voice.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely, I would agree with, there is a new wave of feminine that's happening right now where women are not staying quiet. They're unwilling to compromise. They're unwilling to settle. And anything I can do to further fan that flame or stoke that fire, to have these women who are fully alive in who they are and authentic. They're not in any way apologizing for any fiber of who they are, how they represent themselves, whether it's sexually, in their business, in their personal lives and relationships. I want to know that they see being a woman as a privilege and an honor.
Right.
And something to be celebrated.
Well, that brings up an interesting topic, because women may deem success in a certain way versus men. So do you think that there are general differences between what women deem as success as opposed to men?
So I coach both men and women.
Okay.
My favorites are women to coach, but I coach them both. And even though there might seem like there's a stigma, well, women think relationships, if they have a relationship, it's a success, and men want the career. When you really get down to the heart of the matter for both sides of the fence, they both want the same things. They both want to be loved. They both want to be fulfilled. They both want to feel connected. They both want to be successful, whatever that looks for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me to say that there's a definite difference between what a man deems as successful and a woman, underneath it all, no. How it sounds is different. So men will call me and say, I want to be a higher performer in my job or make more money or get more clients. And when you look at it underneath, some of the things that aren't working is the relationships in their life. So we'll
right.
talk about that. Or for women, they want to, you know, find that man of their dreams or have a better relationship with their sister or things like that. And when you look, they don't realize, they've compartmentalized their life, don't realize what they do day to day in their jobs and careers has a direct correlation to how enlivened they feel to pursue those conversations and to bridge those gaps between them and their loved ones. So
right.
underneath it all, it's ultimately the same conversation. They just shows up differently.
Interesting. So do you think that, you know, when I think back to, you know, when I was growing up and watching television shows and how women, you know, became successful and using their sexual power, like, you know, kind
yes.
of their sexuality to get there. Do you think that we're breaking out of that? Do you, you
absolutely
know? Okay.
To speak on that specifically with my own personal experience, I had a corporate job and it was in a very male-dominated industry. And a lot of times the men that I worked with and alongside very much wanted me to do things a certain way. And what I found was the reason why I had the degree of success that I had was my ability to actually source my power from being a woman and feminine. And people mistake feminine power with seduction or charm or sexuality. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, those are amazing tools that we have. But the core and innate power of a woman, you know, no matter how many skyscrapers men build, no matter how many amazing buildings, we create life.
Right.
So that power of whether we have children or not, that power that's deep inside us, drawing from there is a place that absolutely, I think, is unnavigated space for some women. And it's very, very much a place that is a wellspring for success and fulfillment.
So I know you do public speaking.
Yes.
So now, had you done public speaking before you became a relationship coach? And how was that transition? Like, I mean, I couldn't imagine, well, standing in front of 250 people and just being natural and okay with it.
I think I've always had a love for speaking. I was, you know, in high school, president of student council. So you like talked in front of the gym full of students. And even in my corporate job, in my promoted position, I had to do a lot of speaking engagements to large groups of people. It's still something I'm terrified by, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, courage is when desire outweighs the fear. And so for me, my desire of having that message be out there in the world is more important than me listening to the fear of wanting to stay home and
right.
not be seen on stage. And as much as it's nerve-wracking, I do love it. I love it.
Okay.
And it's scary.
I can imagine. So you had the marketing and sales director background.
Yes.
So how is it to brand yourself, and what kind of advertising marketing do you do for yourself?
So it's different when you're branding yourself, because the product is you mm-hmm. and your services. And the biggest thing I can say that I've used to brand myself, honestly, especially with coaching, is word of mouth and gaining people's trust. So I can't do the sales shtick that I did in sales and marketing and like talk about all the amazing features and, oh, and buy now and you'll get this, you know, second set of knives. Really, it's I just be as present with mm-hmm. them as possible and gain their trust. And I'm not actually attached to any clients. I want them to speak to me, connect with me, and feel safe, and that what they get with me is a real deal, raw, untapped humanity and authenticity. And it's a bit different than the sales and marketing where you can do massive cold calling. Wouldn't be honest for me to do the sales pitch I did in my job in this position. It's way too important. Mm-hmm. And to have these beautiful, emotionally naked human beings in my space, in our conversations, I only want to do it if they feel safe.
Well, that's great. Now, I always like to ask this question of my guests, and Stephen, I'm going to ask you the same question after I ask Sasha, but what advice would you give your 20-year-old self? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
No, it's great. I would say to her, you have everything it takes, and I know you're afraid, and it's all going to work out. And you're exactly where you need to be.
Yeah, it's amazing how you lose sight of that when you get so consumed with your day-to-day and you know, trying to focus on what you want. You forget that you actually have the power within.
Absolutely.
Totally. Yeah.
Totally.
Okay, I'm turning the attention over to Stephen now. So what would you tell your 20-year-old self?
My 20-year-old self, wow. I would say do more of what you're passionate about sooner.
Right.
And have more courage to do that and trust your gut. And that's something that, you know, I've been working on the last probably decade of my life. But, you know, if I just would have done that when I was younger mm-hmm. and realized that happiness and success and health, both physical and mental, there's access to that when you actually listen to yourself.
Right.
Rather than trying to be and do and have everything else that you think you're supposed to be and do and have.
Or what other people think you're supposed to be.
Exactly.
Right.
So that's what I would tell myself. And then I'd give myself a high five.
Amazing. Well, thank you to my two guests for joining me today. We have been talking to Dr. Stephen DeWitt and Sasha Lala. If you would like to find out more about them, visit drdewitt.com. So that's DEWIT.com. Yep. And Sasha Lala. So it's SachaLala.com. And links will actually be available after the show at careercycles.com. So you have been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Angela Fitzpatrick. The other hosts of Career Buzz are Mark Franklin at careercycles.com, Leanne Sachs at livingthemoment.ca. If you have any comments on today's show, please email me at angelacareerbuzz@gmail.com, or with questions about Career Buzz, please email Mark Franklin at mark@careercycles.com. Thanks so much, Stephen and Sasha. Technical production today was by Melissa Rodway. Career Buzz is every Wednesday at 11 a.m. on CIUT. That's it for today's version of Career Buzz. Thank you so much for listening.